What is food security? Is food security something that everyone should be worrying about? Or is food security an issue only government needs to worry? In 2020, and in light of this COVID situation, personally, I think food security is everyone's business. The food security, as defined by the United Nations Committee on World Food Security, it means that all people at all times have physical, social, and economic access to sufficient, safe, and nutrition foods that meets their food preference and dietary needs for an active and healthy life. I know it's a lot of process, but this podcast is all about the growing, the making, the keeping, the storing, distribution, everything about food, but not just about the taste. Hi, my name is Ip, and welcome to the Functional Food Podcast. Today's episode, we're going to speak with Turtle Tree Labs, the winner of 2020 Livability Challenge. And we're going to be speaking with Max Rye, Chief Strategist of Turtle Tree Labs. So Max has over 20 years of executive experience in the tech space, who believes that technology could solve the world's biggest problems. Using cell-based technology, Turtle Tree Labs is able to recreate mammal milk, including human breast milk, which will transform the entire industry. Max formulates strategies and gives directions to the team to accelerate the company growth to the next level. And I'm pretty excited today. We're going to speak with Max. So I hope you enjoy today's episode. And without further ado, please enjoy. Hi, Max. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. Today, we have Max from Turtle Tree Labs, and maybe let's dive into the question straight away. And perhaps the first question that I would like to ask, who was the first founder that tasted the product?
I guess that would have to be myself.
How did it taste like?
It's a bit creamy and a little salty at the same time, just because whatever is in that media is going to affect the taste of it.
So when you guys started out, right, were you aiming for human milk or you were aiming for cow's milk? Like the first thing you tasted?
Yeah, it was cow milk, and I can tell you, I mean, we're very excited about cow milk, but the human breast milk is such an innovation that we are very excited to be doing that as well.
So how does your the science of the milk works for you guys? Like, so the I've talked to the previous winner, so last year's winner, Sophie Bionutrients, and they were using algae to do the protein, and you guys are not doing that. You guys are doing cell culture, right?
Yes. Our stuff is really, really exciting. What we're doing is we're actually taking cells inside of the milk itself already. So when a cow expresses milk, for the first few hours of that milk, you're still going to see like living cells that are in that milk as well. In the milk itself, which is crazy, right? So you can actually go in and pull out those living cells right from the milk itself. That is how we can source the first cells that we start off with.
I always thought when you guys say cells, right, there were the milk producing glands of the animal.
Yes. I mean, there's a process, right? Mm-hmm. Let me just explain really quick how the process works. Mm-hmm. So once you've taken these cells outside, out of the milk itself, mm-hmm. you can then actually expand those cells to millions and hundreds of millions and billions of cells. There's a process where you can put in a special media to get these cells to grow to a large enough number. And once they do, we have this other media. When I say media, I'm talking about, imagine a cocktail or a fluid, yep. right? That actually mixes in with these cells. And then what those cells do, they actually differentiate or they turn into these type of cells that are inside of the breast. And then those cells start to express milk. They actually are able to to secrete out the same process, the milk itself, which happens inside the cow or inside of a human being or any mammal. And that's how you may want to look at it, is we're able to recreate the same environment that happens inside of the mammal.
So that means you can replicate any sort of like world famous, you know, if this cow is known for the milk, you can go and get their cells and replicate it perpetually, right? Is there a limit to the replication?
That's a good question. Yes, you can. Theoretically, we can go into any of these cows. Now, does it make sense? You know, that's a different situation because that process is expensive and it's long. So for us, it's better to, like everything else, have a standard, right? Mm-hmm. We find the absolute best cow we can find who has the absolute best genes, and we can start off with that cow, and then that cow can be the future of all the other cell lines or all the other milk that comes from our process.
So you guys were aiming for like a sweet spot of price per liter, right?
Yeah, I think price per liter is very important if you're talking about the general market, right? For everybody around the mm-hmm. world to be able to access milk. The price has got to be low enough. I'm talking about 50 cents a liter is where we have to get to because remember, our business model is not selling directly yep. to consumers. We're working with businesses like the existing dairy companies. And for them, we got to get the price down to like 50 cents a liter. And that can be done. It's just much longer term. It takes a while for us to build the R&D capabilities to get to that point, okay? So mm-hmm. in the meantime, we are looking at other things. So we are looking at, hey, our platform is quite powerful. Why not look at some of the high value components that are inside of human breast milk? And so this might be complex sugars or certain types of proteins that can only be found in human breast milk. And that can help an entire infant formula industry, or it can help an entire nutritional side to transform or elevate themselves and close that gap from mother's milk to infant formula today.
Yeah, because that sector has, no one has the raw material for it, right? Like you guys probably will be the only ones to have that kind of volume that commercial products would require.
Yes, you're right. I mean, you're absolutely right. When you're talking about scaling up something like that, using biotechnology is much more, it's much more possible than trying to get extra breast milk from mother or so forth.
Yeah, I can imagine getting 100,000 mothers, milking them will be a difficult, much more difficult journey than you guys trying to replicate this in the
lab. Absolutely, absolutely. But at the end of the day, there's still a need for it, right? There's
yes.
still, not all moms are able to breastfeed.
Yes.
And of course, there still is a place for these types of products. And that is where we can actually provide this technology as we scale and as we bring the price point down. Because with that, we can go to the market much, much sooner, because it's not really a commodity, right?
Yep.
It's more a very high value product. So we can do that early. We know moms and families are willing to pay whatever it takes to give the kids the best. That we start off with, and if you can look at in the future, then we're looking at even cow milk, goat milk, camel, sheep, all these different mammals. Someday we can actually make milk from all of these different mammals.
So when you guys say scale, right, what do you mean by scale? Like, is it 10,000 liters a month, or?
It's a good question. Scaling basically means getting out of a petri dish and out of a laboratory
yep.
and into a production level environment. And that can be everything from 2,000 liters to 20,000 liters. It depends at that point really on how big of a market we're serving. So it just means getting out of the laboratory area and getting into commercial scale.
Okay, so your biggest cost will be the growing mediums, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, biggest cost is the growth media and lactation media.
So where do you guys find all this concoction? Like, I don't think it's like an off the shelf thing, right? Like, it's a very customized, very special.
So You know, there is a lot of off-the-shelf type of products, but they're a fortune. They cost a lot of money. So for us, it was important to understand what that lactation media is, what is that growth media. And one of the things that our CEO did very early on was build a very robust team and multiple divisions that focus on a specific thing. And one of those divisions, their job right from the get-go was to focus on this media and how we can produce it ourselves, so then we don't have to buy it off the shelf. Yeah, absolutely. So that was a big part of our strategy, because we knew this was going to be something that's going to be valuable to the road. So today we're able to do quite a bit of this internally. We don't have to rely on buying this off the shelf. We can produce all of this internally, and that brings the price down dramatically. Now, we are also working with the National Research Institute of ASTAR here in Singapore. They have some tremendous capabilities, and they're also very, very focused on helping companies like us to scale and bring the prices down.
So this podcast is mostly about food security, right? And so I'd like to understand, as a consumer myself, right? Would there be a point, say, in the next 10 years that I can make this like a yogurt product? Like, you know, today I can buy a few packets and a few bottles, you know, put everything in and it become a yogurt tomorrow. Will we be able to do the same, like a very small scale production?
That's very, very possible. As a matter of fact, those are the type of discussions that happen inside of our R&D, R&D room.
Yep.
We can envision a future where you can see small scale machines or bioreactors or whatever you may want to call it that can produce milk in your own home, or say, for example, a product that's at the store that's used this technology to create it. But one of the things that we are focused on doing, and this is why we have so much support from the Singapore government and all of these other agencies, we want the capabilities here in Singapore. We don't need farms, big farms like in New Zealand or other parts of the world. We can actually do this right here in a country that doesn't have any space for farms.
And that is
what we are excited about, being able to build the capabilities so we can churn out large volumes of milk and dairy right here in Singapore.
Is the milk from the cells that you guys made, right? Are they the same as the milk that we drink from the animal? Like, would there be a difference?
I mean, that's a good question, right? How different is the milk that you're going to be drinking compared to, you know, what comes from a cow or a sheep or whatever it is? And the answer to that is going to be remarkably similar, because the components or the things that are inside of it, like the proteins and the complex sugars and everything else, is actually identical, or biosimilar is actually the right word to use, than say any type of plant-based milk or anything like that that's out there. This would be much closer to the real thing than anything else. So you'd be able to get the same type of flavor and same type of profile.
Because milk, as the product, when you drink, when you consume, right, they are not the original component from the cow. So, you know, from what I've seen online, like, they kind of separate the buttermilk component and then the cream. So you kind of get a watered down version of the milk. So for you guys, it will be the actual, as though I squeeze it from the cow portion.
It's funny you say that, because at the end of the year, it's funny you say that because you're so right. People think that the milk that they're drinking is actually coming from a cow and right into their glass and they're drinking it.
Yeah.
No way. It's very far from that. Imagine every cow produces different kind of milk, right? One of them has a little bit more fat in it, one has a little bit less fat, and various other little different things. So what they do is they collect milk from thousands of cows, they put it inside one giant steel tank, they mix it up, and then they have to pull it apart and put it back together so they can standardize it, right?
Yep.
So that being said, for our process, we can give these dairy processors is exactly what they're looking for. So our cells can pump out exactly the type of amount of fat, amount of sugars, the amount of all these other things, proteins that are in that milk, mm-hmm. in a way where they can just take it and put it right into their manufacturing line.
So that means there'll be a time in the next few years that I can, if I'm a cheesemaker and I want mm-hmm. this particular variation of milk, I can just go ahead and order that?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely right. And those are some of the exciting things in the future, because you're absolutely right. When you're making cheese or you're making some of these products, you really, the milk quality and the type of milk really does make a big difference mm-hmm. in the end. So these are some of the things you'd be able to do in the future.
Then I've spoken to a few startups and founders, and there seems to be one barrier in all this food science is the language, the spoken language. Like, it's very difficult to translate even plant-based meat. Like, it sounds okay in English, but once you translate to say Mandarin, it sounds weird. You know, it doesn't make sense. Do you guys have this problem, or are you going to face this problem soon?
You know, everybody in the industry is going to face a very similar challenge, right? Yeah. And for us, it's working with our partners, working with the other dairy companies that are out there that can help to reshape the language. But the right language that goes out to market is very important, like you said. And people want to hear something that is digestible for them, yeah. right? So I think a lot of this will happen in collaboration with our partners. We are also very closely watching this area.
The products that you guys have, right? What is the furthest that you guys want to pull out? Like, do you want to get? I saw another interview where one of the co-founders said that they want to try to do whale milk. Like, is that considered far-fetched, or are you guys going to go further?
You know, what's really cool is when you have biotech,
yeah.
when you look at the latest deep cutting edge tech, you no longer have the type of boundaries that you have in nature where you can't just go and milk a whale.
Yes.
It's a very difficult process, right?
Yeah.
So it's very difficult to even understand and know what that tastes like. By the way, I know in Japan, they do sell a glass of whale milk for like $800. I don't know how they get it. I don't know. But I do know that there are people out there who have tried it. It's like 60% fat, by the way. It's just so... It's very, very...
So it's like butter kind of
feeling. Basically. But that being said, what is possible? Those things are possible. Because remember, all we need is the cells. Once we get some cells to start with, the same platform applies,
yep.
and we should be able to produce the milk from that mammal.
So right now in the lab, right, how long does it take from cells to product?
It depends on how well developed that cell line is. It can take some time, right. Take that cell and put it through a process where it's just right for us to be able to plug it into our platform. That part can take, say, sometimes months to be able to get to. But once we have an established cell line, mm-hmm. we're able to plug that into our system and continually churn out milk for an extended period of time. We're talking about months on end. It can continue making milk. As long as you keep feeding it, lactation media, it will continue converting and churning out milk.
Does the process work kind of like the algae where, you know, they are in the jar and you just add stuff in and it will just, you know, do its thing? Or must you coax it into production mode?
At a very high level, many of these enzymes, many of these types of many cells work in a very similar fashion when it comes to you have feed going in and you have output coming out. That being said, when you really dig deep into it, there are some big differences
mm-hmm.
As far as that mechanism, that machinery that's inside of that cell that actually converts this media into whatever the target product is.
Do you have a lot of people who don't believe in this science?
We, listen, for us, When you say science, you mean the like accepting it as a food or?
Yeah, just, you know, culturally, and maybe that's a whole look of it, you know.
If it was 20 years ago, I would say that it'd be very difficult. Yeah, today, because of several different things, you got food security issues, you got sustainability, you got climate change issues, you have the young people of this world, they're just not accepting their current solutions. They want new solutions, which is why like Impossible and Beyond just exploded. It's a lot of the younger folks who are making a lot of these big decisions. And in the very same way, I am not imagining that our first customer is going to be a senior citizen who's never done anything, and this will be their first alternative product. We definitely think it's going to be the youth who's going to push this through, and once they, because they want that change. We haven't seen a big resistance from any of our community, though.
Well, that's good news. I mean, so you guys will be pushing it out as a product in the next 2-3 years?
You're absolutely right. And some products, maybe even sooner.
Oh, okay. Maybe, are they mostly infant products, or are they like the normal dairy?
Some of the milk components that we are looking at are for infant nutrition as well as for senior care. There's a lot of very, very valuable proteins that are very beneficial for humans and for babies alike that we want to go to the market with first. There are also much less regulatory hurdles with some of these components than the entire milk itself
milked together.
So that is a big reason why we may go to market with some products, and then the next iteration can be that whole glass of milk.
Then with this science, right, can we add flavors in naturally? Like can we somehow make the cells or put other cells in to give us a natural flavor rather than putting a flavoring itself?
There are a lot of possibilities for natural flavorings based off of what type of cells you can co-culture and you mix with. These are some future iterations that we would be able to do. But I do believe the future is going to be a lot of natural ingredients that will eventually kick in, and a lot less of the synthetic type of stuff that we currently see.
I imagine growing your team would be a very difficult journey, right? Like, how do you find people who are specialized in cell cultured milk? Like, is there any at this point?
I hear this sometimes, just this challenge of finding good teams, even right here in Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
I was on one panel recently, and one person said there's no talent here, everything is outside, and they had to bring them in. But the fact is, that's not true. There's a lot of amazing scientists, very brilliant people, Singaporeans, who are right here. If you can't excite them enough, there's no reason for them to leave what they're doing and join you. You see what I'm saying, right?
Yep.
You have to be a company that's exciting for people to want to work with and work for. And so for us, we have not had that issue. As you have probably seen, we do a lot of podcasts. We do a lot of media. What we're doing is not just food security, but it's about sustainability and changing the way the world will access milk. That's exciting for scientists. And as a result, we've been able to attract a lot of great people, a lot of brilliant people. So for us, we have not seen as much of a challenge when it comes to the talent.
So what do you guys do on a daily basis? What is it like in a day as a milk scientist?
I guess it depends, because we have three different science teams.
Okay.
But the teams, if it's say a molecular biology team, they are focused on that media that we talked about earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
How do we iterate on that? How do we make it bring the prices down?
Yep.
How do we make sure that it's safe for consumption? How does it affect the cells? Many of these things, that's what the molecular biologists do. What the cell biologists do is they go iterate on the cell lines. So if you can imagine all these cells that we talked about earlier, how they'll go in, they will test their previous experiments from the day before, see how it has affected that cell line, iterate on it, maybe try different media on that cell. these are some of the things on a daily basis what some of the scientists do, and based off of that data, can look at how they can improve the process. Process optimization and cell line optimization is one of the biggest things that these scientists do, and that usually takes many, many months to get the conditions just perfect for these cells to thrive and commercialize.
So then who was the one that came up with this, the first idea to, you know, create this milk? Like, was it the three of you, or?
It was really our CEO who came to me with the problem, and we all actually pulled together, put our heads together, and came up with a solution.
Yeah, I mean, I don't imagine this would be something that, you know, someone will kind of grow up thinking they want to make. Like, this is probably a, comes out from the problem, right? Like a very, very big problem that probably there's no solution at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's true, because listen, if you want to make cheese, right, like you mentioned earlier, you can't go get almond milk and go make cheese, okay? It doesn't work. Yeah. And you can't do that with oat milk either. Those are great fluid markers. There's nothing wrong with them, except for the fact that almond milk consumes a lot of water. But the other alternatives and so forth, they're great as a replacement for the fluid milk. But it's a $700 billion industry, right? And the majority of that has nothing to do with fluid milk. It has to do with cheese, butter, cream, all of these other types of things, yogurts, all of these other dairy products. Those need raw milk to be able to start with. So if you can imagine, you need a different technology to be able to get to all of these other things. And that was really a big part of why we thought this was necessary.
We come to a point that you run out of good cells to harvest from? Like,
well, if you build out your cell lines right, and you are able to immortalize your cell lines, you don't have that problem. You can indefinitely. I mean, for example, in the pharma industry, there are certain cell lines they're still using for 50 years now. That they originally harvested. So that problem is not necessarily the issue once you get it right.
But we will see a reduction in cows, right? Like eventually.
Oh yes, oh yes. I definitely see that happening, even outside of the work that we're doing. There's already a shift where you're going to start seeing less cows over time.
Okay, so other animals that produce milk, right? Like goat, for example. They are very, you know, very compact animal, and they don't really need as much space as a cow. Like if I had a house with a backyard, I could, you know, I mean, a bit cruel, but I could have a little goat, and I could get a goat that produces milk, you know, it would be 3-4 liters a day. Like, how much science, right, that does it take to replace that little cute animal?
And I think that's interesting. Listen, we're not going to be able to replace all these animals anytime soon.
Yep.
Even if you had your goat in the backyard, that's fine. But what we're talking about how can we feed 6 million people on this island, or another billion people in China and in India? That type of scale is a whole different thing if you think about it. We need God knows how many goats to be able to do.
Yes.
So that's why this type of technology, if we can scale it up, can be the answer to be able to feed the world. And I'm not saying that all these animals will disappear, but we won't necessarily need to cause the damage ecologically to be able to feed all these people.
Is there a waste product from your stuff? Like, there must be some waste, right, after the cells depleted the medium. So what happens to the waste?
Oh, all of it's recyclable. All of this can be yes.
Wow.
It could be compost.
Right. So but you can't put it back into the growth medium.
If it's entirely spent, then we can. It'll just we would have to recycle that. But otherwise, there is some process where we can reuse a lot of the same things. But if it's completely spent, then it could be compost or so forth. And that's a part of that circular economy of the future.
Yeah. So right now, does it smell in the lab?
Not necessarily. You'd be amazed. It's very, very sterile in the lab. Everything is super clean. The environment for the type of work that we do has to be super clean.
Yeah, because I would imagine, like, if you've been to like a dairy farm, like, there are some smell, you know, from the animal. So in the future, there won't be this sort of odor?
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily see that being a case, because remember, much of that smell comes from a lot of other things as well, from those animals,
yes.
traces of those animals.
Yes.
During this process and using cells, there will be none of that, only the product that we're looking to create.
So then in the next maybe 20 years, the farmers will be a very different breed of profession, right? Like you can't just be, you know, a simple person. You have to really dive deep into all this science. Mm-hmm. And
maybe not. I mean, listen, there, all of that feed that we're talking about that goes into the cell lines, somebody still has to grow that stuff. That's a lot of that stuff is still plants or different.
Right.
So somebody still has to do that. Maybe they can change from being doing one profession in farming to something different that we need. I don't necessarily see this being a lose or win type of a situation. This could be a win-win if we do it right.
So, okay, so you say that your growth media comes from, some of it comes from plants, right? Like, mm-hmm. are there any like Singapore sourced components?
I can tell you that a lot of it will be. At the moment, there isn't very much here, but I think Singapore government is looking to build those capabilities. We are looking to try to build an ecosystem where we can have a lot more going on right here in Singapore.
Right, because before I started this podcast, right, there was the whole COVID thing, and actually I wanted to start a farm, like a vertical farm in Singapore, and I only wanted to maybe do microgreens. You know, it's a much more higher price market. So if mm-hmm. someone like me who wants to do like a special farm to grow special items, would I be one of those suppliers in the future?
You can be. You definitely may be. And I can tell you, the best way to look into this, if there's anybody out there that's listening who's interested to getting into this industry, go look at NUS and go talk to A*STAR. There's a lot of technologies out there that and even NTU, that they're building, that they would love to have great entrepreneurs come in and see how they can work together to launch and to put out to the market. None of these research institutes can do everything by themselves.
Yep.
Okay, they need entrepreneurs, savvy young people to come in and help take this to market, help build a use case for some of this technology. And they have a lot of amazing cutting edge technology.
Are you guys, you know, planning to work with NASA to, you know, or even like Elon Musk, you know, SpaceX for the Mars journey?
I sure hope so. That's one of my personal goals, as a matter of fact. That someday we can have a lot of this technology be a big part of mankind, you know, being able to settle on other planets and being able to get all of the nutritional needs met, right? I think that, and you can do that if we can produce a small-scale bioreactor that can produce milk. We don't need to send a cow up there. We can just send a small bioreactor that can, if the process is optimized, can actually churn out milk for the civilizations of the future.
Okay, then you guys have won many awards, right? And how is funding a problem for you guys, like, at this point?
Listen, I think funding, we are very fortunate.
Yep.
But it was hard work. I mean, I'm not going to tell you it was easy. It was really hard work, and we've earned every little bit of it. That meant our entire team. And what you don't see when you talk to people like us is our team behind us. Yep. They are the real gems of our company, who are really doing all the business reports and building out use cases and showing projections, doing all the things it takes to win this. so we can showcase to the judges of every competition or any organization that this is not just the founders talking about this amazing technology, mm-hmm. but there's some real numbers behind it. There's real technology behind it and an amazing team. That is the reason why we win some of these competitions, I believe.
Do you see maybe a bit of a shift from all the money going to tech space and now they are coming more towards the food space?
I've seen a lot of interest from traditional venture capitals who traditionally do a lot of tech stuff. You're right, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Where they saw the success of Beyond and Impossible and many of these other companies, and they realized there's a massive opportunity. Step back, let's hold on. There's an interesting thing going on, a different phenomena where the food scene itself is transforming and technology is playing a bigger role in it. And there's massive opportunities. Everybody's got to eat every day. So they definitely see a big shift in that direction.
Any competition you guys are going to compete against anytime soon?
We're very thankful and fortunate. We won a few in a row, the Temasek as well as the EWC or the Entrepreneurship World Cup. After this, we decided as a company that we are probably no longer going to be doing any more competitions and just focus on work and continue to iterate on what we're doing. So we want to stop while we're at the
Yeah, you guys won a few in a row. That's really amazing. I don't think anyone else has this sort of record, right? Consecutive records.
Yeah, we're very thankful. Very, very thankful to be able to pull that off. But now it's time for us to work. We gotta produce some results pretty soon and make sure that we can put something out there for the public.
Well, I think with that, I think we could end it here, and it's a really nice conversation that we have. Perhaps maybe next time we check in when your product has gone into the market, because I would like to have a taste test.
Absolutely, we'd love that. No, sounds great. We appreciate this opportunity. Thank you so much.
And with that, I would like to thank you for listening to another episode of the Functional Food Podcast. And since you're already here, why not just help us by leaving a review in Apple iTunes or whichever podcast that platform that you're listening from. I think having those reviews will help us understand more on the kind of content that you guys would like to listen to. And also, like always, if you would like to appear, just head down to functionalfoodpodcast.com and it will bring you to the page, the anchor page, and it will show you all the necessary clicks for you to get in touch with this podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week on the Functional Food Podcast.